We're living in a time when truth is under attack. Lies are easy to tell, easy to spread, and easy to believe. But truth is costly. And nowhere is the cost greater than for mothers in crisis. When a woman is told abortion is her only option, silence and lies surround her. But when she walks into a preborn network clinic, she's met with compassion, support, and the truth about the life growing inside of her. That moment of truth happens through a free ultrasound, and it's a game changer. When a mother sees her baby and hears that heartbeat, it literally doubles the chance she'll choose life. Preborn network clinics are on the front lines, meeting women in their darkest hour, loving them, helping them choose life, and sharing truth. Friend, this is not a time to be silent. It's a time for courage, for truth, for life. Just $28 provides one ultrasound and the opportunity for a mother to see her baby to help her choose truth and life. Donate today, call #250, say the keyword baby. That's #250 in your phone and say the keyword baby, or give online at preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
We inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance character, and character hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to The Core here on American Family Radio. Glad to have you with us today on the program on this brand new edition. I'm Walker Wildman. This is American Family Radio. Our website is afr.net, afr.net. If you want to download the American Family Radio app, we would greatly appreciate that. Just go to your app store and type in AFR, or you can type in American Family Radio in your app store. Click the download button. It's free. And you have access to all things American Family Radio, including this show, there at your fingertips, or using the AFR app. Glad to have you here with us. John chapter 6 is where we have been this week, and we'll wrap up on the Friday edition in John chapter 6 as well. The reading verses 26. And 27. The context here, I would encourage you to go read it for yourself, but the context is the disciples were looking for Jesus around the Sea of Galilee or the Sea of Tiberias, depending on how you reference it. And this was after the feeding of the 5,000. This was after Jesus walking on the water, and the disciples had basically lost Jesus. They didn't know where he went. And they found Jesus around Capernaum, around the Sea of Galilee, and they asked Jesus about, how did you get here? When did you get here? And Jesus answered them and said, most assuredly I say to you, you seek me, not because you saw the signs, but because you ate of the loaves and were filled. Do not labor for the food which perishes, but for the food which endures to everlasting life, which the Son of Man will give you, because God the Father has set his seal on him. And so Jesus is, in essence, saying, hey, don't look for me just so I can feed you, just so I can perform miracles in front of you, but seek me because I am everlasting life. I am the eternal bread that you need. That's John chapter 6, verses 26 and 27. The story I want to talk about this segment, probably a couple of them, but we've got a couple clips here to get to as well. President Trump and the administration have been pretty much surrounding Venezuela, just to put it simply, with military assets. There's been a large buildup of military assets near Venezuela, and there's been a lot of pressure on Venezuela for a variety of reasons. It's kind of hard to nail down, actually. The Trump administration has accused Venezuela of trafficking lethal drugs into America's homeland. That's been a known thing for some time now. The Venezuela government is headed up by Maduro, very corrupt leader in many regards. And there's a lot other we could talk about here, but Venezuela has been in a bad place for some time now. The as far as what the strategic advantages are to America getting involved in Venezuela, that's to be determined. I'm not sure I have a good answer for you. Nonetheless, the Secretary Rubio was questioned on President Trump's approach to foreign intervention, whether it's Iran or Venezuela. What is the president's strategy for intervention, military intervention, and diplomatic intervention around the world? Secretary Rubio gave us a pretty good answer, a pretty good indication of what President Trump's approach is, and it's a little different than approaches of the past. This is going to be clip one. Let's listen.
Well, the way I would describe it, it's not isolationism. It's also not adventurism, which is this argument that others have fallen into, this that somehow there's a problem in the world, and the only solution to it is for the United States to send military assets to go solve it. What the president has done is he has, number one, he defines what's in the core national interest of the United States. There's a lot of terrible things happening in the world. Not all of them are at our core national interest. Number two, he defines what the outcome he wants. And number three, he takes actions that are very specific and limited to getting the outcome that's good for our country. So the case in point is Iran. Iran had these nuclear facilities. We know what they were. We've known what they were for a long time. And the president conducted a precise campaign. It wasn't a prolonged war. It was a 24-hour operation. B-2 bombers left the mainland of the United States, came over a defined target, dropped payload, 14 missiles or 14 rockets, right into the holes of those facilities. The bunker busters turned around and went home. And that's it. It didn't involve 5 days of fighting. It didn't involve 15 days of fighting. It didn't involve ground troops or 6 months. He had a goal. The goal was we were going to destroy this nuclear facility. We were going to obliterate it. He went in. He did it. He got out. We were done. We achieved our objective. The objective was the destruction of the nuclear facility, which was achieved, without entangling America in something broader than that. That's a great example of the limited and strategic and focused use of American power to achieve something that's in our national interest. It was in our national interest not to have Iran have a nuclear program that can be turned into a weapons program that could one day threaten the United States. And the president found an opportunity to do something about it, and he did it.
Well, there you have it. That's a very good answer about the Secretary of State. As far as how does President Trump operate? How do you balance this isolationist approach, which is pretty much what your Senator Rand Paul and others have pushed, which is America should not get involved in any foreign matters under any circumstances. Pretty much that's the way they view things, with some rare exceptions. And then there's your Lindsey Graham approach of let's get involved in everything. Let's be the policemen of the world. Let's bomb everybody, pretty much, has been the Senator Lindsey Graham approach, which is, I'm being a little bit bombastic there, but not far off. These are the type folks that are just excited about getting involved in Ukraine. They want us to bomb Iran. They want us to bomb Russia. They want us to send troops into Ukraine, boots on the ground in Ukraine, whatever it takes, whatever the cost. They get very, very, it's kind of a weird obsession they have with wars and how, you know, aggressive they are when they're talking with the media and on television. But it's a very serious matter when you're talking about putting American lives on the line, very serious matter. And I think some of these politicians take it a little bit too lightly, as if we're playing some video game or some betting game, but instead we're dealing with American lives and American soldiers, and it shouldn't be taken lightly. And there's been a lot of bad decisions over the decades with sending Americans into harm's way without a true strategic goal and objective. And that's what pretty much sums up our Middle East policy for the last 30 years or longer. Venezuela is an interesting dynamic. I'm not an expert in this, and I haven't even studied enough of it to talk extensively about it. There's a couple things going on here just that are things, if you just study up on this for a brief time, you'll understand this. Venezuela does have a lot of energy reserves. They have a lot of oil reserves, hence they've been exporting oil to Iran and other places. China and Russia and others, Iran as well, have been kind of partnering with Venezuela on some things. Obviously, those are our enemies. Venezuela has been under political and economic instability for some time now, somewhat of a humanitarian crisis, if you will. And there's probably other things as well, but that's just some of the high-level notes. Venezuela has been exporting lethal drugs to America for some time now. What does U.S. involvement there look like? I'm told that people on the ground there, Venezuelan citizens, are actually very much in favor of some type of U.S. involvement. They basically want to be liberated from Maduro. What's the long-term objective here? I'm not really sure. I'm not really sure the Trump administration has articulated that as well. I don't think President Trump's going to get us involved in a war per se. I definitely don't think we're going to have boots on the ground in Venezuela on any type of scale. But I think that President Trump has a good track record of taking measured approaches and measured decisions on foreign policy and military engagement, and I just trust that the president isn't going to get us involved in a decades-long war in Venezuela. To what end? I'm not really sure. But could there be some kind of geopolitical stuff going on here, some maneuvering to block out China and Iran and other bad actors from influencing Venezuela and maybe corner the region, if you will, with our influence? Possibly so. Do we force Maduro out through peaceful means and put a more Western U.S. ally at the helm in Venezuela? Maybe so. Maybe that's the end outcome, is just to force Maduro out without firing weapons. But we'll just continue to track that and see where that goes. But nonetheless, the president has a pretty good track record of not getting America deeply involved in these wars with no attainable win and outcome that is favorable to our country without spending trillions of dollars and thousands of American lives. So we'll continue to track that. I will say for all of the Democrats that criticize President Trump for bombing the narco traffickers in the Caribbean and in the Pacific, just spare me the outrage, because you know who was one of the chief proponents 20 to 30 years ago of bombing the cartels? Well, none other than President Joe Biden. Let's take a little trip back in history and listen to this clip from some time ago of then Senator Joe Biden talking about bombing the cartels. Let's listen.
Every president for the past two decades, Democrat and Republican alike, has declared war on drugs. And each of them has lost that war and lost it miserably. They lost because they attempted to deal with only part of the drug problem. They lost because their initiatives were pulled apart by bureaucratic squabbling among their advisors. They lost because they always did too little and they did it too late. We don't oppose the president's plan. All we want to do is strengthen it. We don't doubt his resolve. All we want to do is stiffen it. The trouble is that the president's proposals are not big enough to deal with the problem. We think we should do more to stem the flow of drugs across our borders, and we think we should go one step further. Let's go after the drug lords where they live with an international strike force. There must be no safe haven for these narco terrorists, and they must know it. We have to lock up the dealers for a long, long time. And we have to attack the source from which the drugs come. And we have to do that not a piece at a time, but all at once. And we have to do it now. And there's not any reason why we can't do that. We have the power, we have the money, and we have the knowledge.
There is Senator Joe Biden in 1989, Bobby, talking about striking the narco-terrorist wherever they may be.
It just don't get no better than that.
It doesn't.
I mean, you could put that on the midterm campaigns all day long.
Yeah. You know, Bobby, it is quite shocking how far we've come, though, from the Democrats and Republicans agreeing that we need to take out the cartels to now the Democrats defending the cartels.
Yeah, that was circa 1989.
George H.W. Bush.
That's right.
In the White House.
Well, that's when they were still talking to one another, you know, both sides of the aisle.
Yeah, and there was more to agree on than not to agree on.
Yeah, representative of Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan days.
Yeah, exactly. There you have it, folks. So Senator Joe Biden, the chief proponent of striking the narco-terrorist wherever they may be. And at the end of the day, folks, American lives are being saved for every boat full of terrorists and drugs being taken out. Thousands, and this is no exaggeration, thousands of American lives are being saved. These illicit, addictive drugs have been wreaking havoc on Americans for a long, long time. And there's just no reason to sit idly by while they're imported. And using the military on the cartels and the narco-terrorist is fully appropriate. Fully appropriate use of force. We'll be back in a few.
At the Core podcast are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to The Core here on American Family Radio. Before we get to our guest that we have on, I do want to mention an event coming up at the end of January. We're going to have our first ever Hannah's Heart Conference at Hope Church here in Tupelo, Mississippi, happening January 30th and 31st. So Hannah's Heart is having their first conference at the end of January, January 30th and 31st, coming up, obviously, and early 2026. And it's going to be a great time of fellowship. There's going to be testimonies from host of Hannah's Heart, Ann Cockrell and Kendra White, fellowship with other women navigating infertility, miscarriage, singleness, hard diagnoses, and other challenges. Food will be provided, and there's a discount going on this week. If you use the code HOPE50, you'll get 50% off this week using the discount code HOPE50. If you go to AFR.net right there on the homepage, you can read more about this conference. AFR.net right there on the homepage, you can read more about the Hannah's Heart Conference. It's coming up January 30th and 31st here in just over a month. Well, I do want to move on to our next guest. Kelsey Pritchard is with us. Kelsey's been on the program before. Kelsey Pritchard is Director of Political Communications with SBA Pro-Life America, otherwise known as Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America. Kelsey's with us now. Hey, Kelsey, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Kelsey, the Trump administration, we thought going into it that we would have a pretty pro-life administration, maybe not the most pro-life, but because President Trump has gone back and forth on the pro-life issue depending on the context in which he is questioned on it. And so there was, you know, some understanding that he isn't fully, in line with some of the ways we view the life issue. But nonetheless, there was some pretty good optimism going into the administration with some of the people that were being appointed. And I thought RFK Jr. would come around and support the president's agenda and his campaign agenda. But things just haven't moved quickly enough. And in some cases, we've actually lost some ground. So bring us up to speed.
Yeah, the biggest problem that we're facing on the abortion front is that abortion drugs can be mail ordered into any state. So if you live in a state that has a pro-life law, in a lot of those states, we've seen abortions continue. Not even that. Sometimes they've gone up, even with the pro-life laws in effect, and nationally they have certainly gone up. And that's because there's this Joe Biden rule that's in place that allows for the mail order of these drugs into states where it's illegal. And that rule eliminated in-person doctor visits for women. So essentially anybody can obtain these drugs. You can be a minor. You don't necessarily need to be pregnant. You don't need to be a woman. A lot of the times, sometimes they get in the hands of abusive men who coerce women or poison women with them. And it's it's hard to understand how on earth the FDA has left this rule in place. I mean, how many Biden rules did the administration wipe away on day one, on the first week, in the first 100 days? And yet this one sits on the books and it violates state sovereignty, and it continues to not only cause the deaths of unborn children in this country, but send more women and girls to the ER, who 1 in 10 of them are experiencing severe adverse effects from the drugs, including sepsis. So this is very disturbing, and we've been very clear where we stand on this and calling for Commissioner McCary to be fired because this and other things that he has and hasn't done, it's unacceptable, not only to the pro-life movement, but to America as a whole. 7 in 10 Americans want that Biden rule gone.
Yeah, this is, I'm not going to say shocking, but it is somewhat surprising, because this Biden rule just opened the door for this baby-killing drug to be sent everywhere. And President Trump rescinding this through the FDA is really a no-brainer. I mean, I'm not sure who on the Republican side is going to stand up and say, no, we got to kill more babies. We got to ship this abortion drug to more places. That's just not really a position within the Republican Party. Not to mention, that's the more political side of it, but the primary thing is that this is a dangerous drug. That's just a matter of fact. The studies that have come out on it are very bad. It's very harmful for women. Ultimately, it's harmful all the way around, because its purpose, its goal is to end the life of the child, which in and of itself is reason enough to fully ban the use of this drug. Any idea what's going on at the FDA? Is there infighting? Because there was some indication that they were going to move to review the drug, which I understand sometimes you need some of the studies and the reviews to justify some rulemaking or some recensions. But it seems like this whole pro-life movement over at the FDA has come to a screeching halt.
Yeah, that's right. So early on in the administration, Secretary RFK and Commissioner McCary both promised this study on the safety of abortion drugs as it relates to women. Of course, it's never safe for unborn children. And they themselves have cited the data. RFK cited the study, 1 in 10 women experiencing serious side effects going to the ER. And so they promised this study to AGs, to members of Congress. And we have had no indication that they've actually begun the study. And then last week, Bloomberg had a report out saying that McCary is slow walking the study on purpose and delaying it until after the midterms for political reasons. And, that was very disturbing for us. And that was the point where we started calling for McCary to be fired. Because like I said, we don't think that's a politically smart move. Of course, it's the wrong move. It's the wrong move for the country and for Americans. It's not politically smart either, because 7 in 10 Americans want in-person doctor visits restored. It is very basic, very common sense, regardless of whether you're pro-life or pro-choice. And also, we know that if pro-lifers stay home in the midterms, the Republicans are not going to win. Had 1 to 2% of pro-life voters stayed home last election, President Trump would not be in office right now. And so if it's a political reason that's motivating McCary, it's not a wise one.
Yeah, it's not. And to your point, the pro-life base makes up a significant portion of voters within the conservative movement and the Republican Party. And they're needed in the midterms in 2026. That's putting it mildly. Without them, you just can't win elections. That's just a matter of fact. And I do kind of, Kelsey, I do really get worn out with this Republican strategist approach of trying to get the independents and the moderates when it makes up a very small fraction of the differential of the voting base. But yet you've got millions of voters over here on the pro-life side that say they don't want this. It just seems like the Christians and those with convictions about this life issue get pushed to the wayside so that we can pick up like 0.2% of voters in elections. I mean, how many are you sacrificing that are sitting at home because they're discouraged because the Republicans keep talking the big game about being pro-life, but then they get in charge and don't do much.
Yeah, I mean, sadly, it's this Republican kind of GOP consultant class that has led too many Republicans to be cowards on this issue completely and told them, don't talk about the issue of abortion, you know, focus on the economy. You know, there are a lot of important issues, but when you let the Democrats frame your position on abortion and you hide and run for it and you don't get out there with your pro-life beliefs and credentials and what you're going to do, you're really hurting yourself. It's not a smart move. And the Democrats are going to make you sound way more, make you sound extreme when you're not, when you're reasonable and you represent the people in your party. So it doesn't make a lot of sense, but unfortunately that's been the reality. Our focus at SBA is one of the things that we do is we have a field program that reaches voters, talks to them face to face. We've got an $80 million investment we've announced in the midterms to try to retain majorities for Republicans in the House and the Senate. And that field program is really aimed at driving and turning out pro-life voters. We also reach some persuadables to get that, to show them how extreme the Democrats have become on the issue, get them to vote for Republicans. But a large part of what we do is getting pro-life people motivated. Well, that is hard to do when you have an administration which is doing, on this front at least, exactly what Kamala Harris would have done. So this is not wise of them, but we're going to do our part to try to make sure more pro-life people are elected and sent to Congress.
Absolutely. Hey, Kelsey, tell our folks, Kelsey Pritchard from Susan B. Anthony, SBA America, Pro-Life America, tell us your website where they can read more about your work.
Yeah, go to sbaprolife.org. You can see the latest news there. We've got our own, we're kind of our own news source for anything related to the issue of abortion. So you can check that out. Also learn more about our field program and our scorecard to see where your elected officials stand.
Excellent. Kelsey Pritchard, thanks so much for coming on the program.
Thanks. God bless.
Absolutely. SBA Pro-Life America. That's the website, sbaprolife.org. sbaprolife.org is that URL. And you can read more about their work and all the latest ongoings on the life issue, not just in D.C., but around the country, there at sbaprolife.org. You know, folks, this is, I think there's going to have to be somewhat of an awakening, if you will, a political, not a spiritual, but a political awakening in the Trump administration in the new year. We're heading into the midterms, and don't get me wrong, the Trump administration has done some phenomenal things, especially at the border and with energy. You've got gas prices well below $3 a gallon on average. Some states are seeing $2.25 a gallon gasoline. So the president and the administration on so many fronts has done a lot of good things. So I don't want to undercut that. But there's a lot of low-hanging fruit here, and a lot of things just aren't being done in some of these agencies and not being done fast enough. And this is one example. There is no reason the abortion drug should be untouched here. I mean, this is just patently absurd. What on earth are they doing? We get RFK Jr., we get all of these, you know, physicians over at the FDA and the other agency, CDC, all under HHS. And on the pro-life issue, we're just being left out in the dark. And it's just patently absurd. And meanwhile, you've got baby after baby being murdered through these abortion pills. And this is not a hard selling point. This is not a hard thing to defend in the media. It's very simple. We're for moms and babies. We're for families. We've got a fertility crisis in our country. The last thing we need to be doing is shipping pills around the country, killing babies. So we're for moms, we're for babies, and we're stopping this nonsense. It's evil, and we're putting an end to it. End of discussion. Any more questions? That's it. It's literally a 60-second pitch that leaves everybody speechless. But instead, they've overcomplicated this issue. This is not a hard issue. Abortion is wrong. All of the quote-unquote exceptions are just excuses. And we ought to stop killing babies. That's it. That's literally the talking point. And then no matter where the interviewer or the media goes, that's the talking point because it all leads back to that. All right. You can talk about rape, incest, life of the mother, which many of those instances are not true abortions. All right. They're miscarriages, such as life of the mother, the physician's trying to save the mother, and the child doesn't make it. That's not textbook elective abortion. That's a miscarriage or a stillbirth. All right. So they conflate the media and the pro-abortion side. They conflate all of these circumstances into this, quote, pro-choice side, and then they muddy the waters, and it takes 10 minutes to dissect and pick apart their straw man arguments. But the Trump administration has to do more on this front, on the pro-life front. Also, the FDA was supposedly circulating that they were going to put a black box label on these COVID shots, which the COVID shots are horrendous on multiple fronts. This should have never even happened, much less it should have never been forced on the country through these employer mandates and government mandates. I mean, that was criminal what they did, forcing young, healthy people to get these experimental shots. Where's the justice on that? Operation Warp Speed under the Trump administration 1.0 was an unmitigated disaster that funneled billions of dollars into the pharmaceutical industry's pockets and harmed hundreds of thousands of Americans. These are documented instances of medical harm done through these COVID shots. And what's going on there? Well, we thought something was going on when the FDA was circulating internal papers about putting basically a warning label on the COVID shots. And then what do you know? Marty McCary comes out earlier this week and says, oh no, we're not doing that. Don't worry, Big Pharma. Don't worry. Your COVID shots are fine. They're protected. We're not going to touch them. We're not going to put this warning label on the COVID shots. Where are the investigations into all of this? We've got a report out 2 weeks ago that an internal memo that the FDA was circulating, this is in addition to the black box warning label, the FDA also circulated a memo that they've documented at least 10 instances of children being killed by taking this COVID shot that agency recommended under Biden. Remember, they were recommending the COVID shot for kids, healthy kids. They were recommending the COVID shot. At least 10 confirmed instances of people, of kids dying from taking the COVID shot, and this thing gets buried. And so I think there's just so much more to be done here at the executive level, not to mention Congress. Congress has got to do some stuff. They've been doing nothing. We got one bill through, the one big beautiful bill, and they've been doing nothing since then. More has to be done to save this country.
Listen to these words from the Apostle Paul talking to the church in Ephesus in Ephesians 4. He says, "Let the thief steal no longer, but rather let him labor, doing honest work with his own hands, so that he may have something to share with anyone in need." So clearly, a part of why God entrusts his resources to us is so we can give. Now, when I look at the New Testament, I see several ways we're to give according to God's word. We're to give cheerfully and not under compulsion. We're to give sacrificially. We can see that clearly with the widow's mite, the most famous giver in all of Scripture, and yet we don't even know her name. We're also to give proportionately. To whom much is given, much is required. Is it time for you to take a step back and make a plan to give? Well, the team at AFA Foundation would be happy to help you plan your giving to do it wisely and tax efficiently. Just visit afafoundation.net.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Walker Wildman.
Welcome back to The Core here on American Family Radio. Walker Wildman here for this last segment. Well, we have on with us now Dr. Mike Evans, founder of Friends of Zion, and has written some for American Family News, AFN.net, which is our news service, through the opinion section, and is very adept on what's going on in Israel with his ministry there. Dr. Evans, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Well, I wanted to have you on to talk about, you wrote a recent piece titled How Anti-Zionism is the New Face of Anti-Semitism. And this topic of Israel and the Jewish people has been very prominent since the attack of October 7th, where Hamas slaughtered over 1,000 Israeli civilians. Tell us kind of where we are, because anybody who keeps up with social media and some of these podcasters understands what's going on here, or at least is aware of it. But those who maybe aren't on social media every day, which is probably a good thing, are a little less aware of this Israel debate, if you will, that's been going on in various circles. So kind of bring us up to speed.
Words get people killed. Rabbi Goldstein is the rabbi of a congregation in California, in Poway. He was attacked on the Passover. People killed in his synagogue. He was shot. He just called me moments ago because his brother-in-law was the chief rabbi in Australia who was killed. And his nephew is in critical condition. He's on the way there for the memorial service. So there is an attack right now, and it's unbelievable. Tucker Carlson made a comment that I made on his show, and he said that Mike Evans says that I'm saying things worse than the Nazi party in their party platform. It's true. In the party platform in 1920, the only thing they criticized was Jewish materialism. Tucker Carlson is accusing Israel of Jeffrey Epstein being an Israeli agent. Hundreds and hundreds of attacks. And oh, by the way, he claims to be a Christian. And I want to address this issue right now. He debated Ted Cruz, and he mocked the Bible because he said, well, yes, but God didn't make a covenant with the Jewish people. Well, as a matter of fact, he did. He made a covenant with the land of Israel through Abraham. It's confirmed in 66 books called the Bible. And this is all about that covenant. So what they're attacking, they're not only attacking Jews, they're attacking Christians and their faith. Because if they can sell you that God is a promise breaker, then why in the world would he believe he kept any promises to us?
Yeah, you're right. And to your point, this isn't really deeply intellectually and theologically explained and debated by the likes of Tucker Carlson or Candace Owens, or just name, you know, the podcaster, if you will, that is constantly badgering Israel and the Jewish people. They don't actually get into what you're talking about there. As a matter of fact, they don't even host people that are knowledgeable on this biblical subject matter. Instead, Carlson brings on Senator Cruz and doesn't let the senator talk. I mean, he literally interrupted him. I think I counted like multiple dozen times during the one-hour podcast. But anybody who tries to explain, as the senator was doing, Tucker Carlson just, you know, talks them down and interrupts them and laughs and mocks. And so this really isn't an intellectual conversation or even a deep theological conversation. It's just a very bombastic way of operating. But it's gotten to the point, Dr. Evans, where it's hard to make sense of it. Because, for example, let's just talk about Tucker Carlson. I mean, Tucker Carlson has literally blamed the Jews for virtually, without exaggerating, for many problems that in some instances have nothing to do with Israel. And it's just baffling to me how somebody can blame the Jewish people for all of the world's problems. It just doesn't add up. It doesn't make sense unless you explain it in spiritual terms.
Well, that's right. And it's been going on from the beginning of time. And it's demonic. It's demonic. And the root of it, listen, my father was a professing Christian. He went to church every Sunday. They called him Brother Bob, but he was married to a Jew and he was an anti-Semite. He used to get drunk every Friday night, come home Saturday morning between 1 and 2, sit her in a chair, call her a Jewish whore and beat her up. She wore sunglasses a lot. And he thought I was not his son. So he began abusing me at 4, strangled me, and left me for dead at 11 when I tried to defend her. So I know all about professing Christians who are Jew haters. Now, Tucker Carlson brags that he read the Bible once. Well, Tucker, I'm sorry to tell you, I've written 119 books on the Bible, read by 38 million people. You don't know the Bible. And he said he hates Christian Zionists more than anybody on this earth. Well, that's a problem, because Jesus was a Zionist. Zionist is just another word from Israel. And what in the world would obsess you? Oh, yes, now I know why. Would it be money, Tucker Carlson? The funding that you're getting from the Muslim world, could that have something to do with it? Man's ability to confront evil is only determined by the inspiration he draws from his heroes and his history. Who's Tucker Carlson's heroes? Putin? I'll tell you something. We are in a very serious crisis right now, because during the Holocaust, 6 million Jews were killed. And by the way, the church at the time was evangelical. They came out of the Great Reformation, but they bought into prosperity and patriotism. They put swastikas on their altars. They had a picture of Hitler in their churches. And they said, God sent the chancellor. The trains run on time, and they joined the Nazi party. So we are right now experiencing the worst anti-Semitism of my lifetime. And we better wake up, because 6 million Jews were killed in the Holocaust. But here's what someone never talks about. How many Christians were killed in the Holocaust? 6 million. There were 71 million people killed. 6 million of them were Jew, one third of the Jewish world. But the radical Islamic people who hate Jews hate Christians just as much and will kill them. We saw it in 9/11.
Let me ask you this. Once again, we're talking to Dr. Mike Evans, founder of Friends of Zion. Let me ask you this, because this comes up, and I do think it is something that Christians struggle with answering. There may be, and maybe there has been in the past, decisions or political things or military things that happen in Israel with the Israeli government that even Christians don't agree with or don't like, all right? Whether it's an accidental bombing of civilians or whatever. Some of it may be honest mistakes. I don't really know. But nonetheless, kind of explain to us from a Christian perspective how you can maybe disagree with different decisions of the Israeli government without taking this wide, broad brush approach to being anti-Jew on every matter. Help us kind of work through that.
I'm a veteran. I buried my best friend who went in on the buddy system, RA112051, Jim, 8 weeks in Vietnam, dead. I'm a patriot, but I don't agree with everything that happens in the American government. And I'll tell you this, I was in Iraq during the Persian Gulf War. There was 4 times as much collateral damage in Iraq than was in Gaza. And the same thing goes for Afghanistan. It happens during wartime. And oh, by the way, especially when Hamas puts their bombs in mosques, hospitals, and schools, and uses Palestinians as shields.
Yeah.
So yeah, stuff happens in war and it's not good, but we're not some kind of people drinking Kool-Aid saying, well, the Israeli government is holy or something. We're saying we are Bible believers and this is the Bible land and we don't apologize for it. And we also say we believe in the Ten Commandments. Listen, I just was with the hostages with 1,000 pastors in Nova, the hostages and their families. They were told in the dungeons of Gaza that Jews have horns and tails and are the seed of Satan. And all the diseases of the world, all the wars of the world come from Jews. And they sing in kindergarten, "The rocks are crying out to you. There's a Jew behind me. Come and kill him." Well, what are you going to do with that kind of a radical Islamic ideology? They want you dead. The only reason they kill Jews in Israel, not over land, but because they're Jews. Simple.
Hmm. Let me ask you this. The obviously, there's a spiritual dynamic here. You cannot deny that, that is motivating some people. You mentioned earlier the money. Explain to our audience the need, the critical need for the United States to continue supporting Israel. Obviously, there's the spiritual case, which you've made. It's abundantly clear. Anyone who understands the Bible understands the spiritual case of this. But also the regional kind of geopolitical case for why America needs Israel and Israel needs America. Yes. I mean, they're our only ally in the region.
Israel's the firewall. They're the proxy. America's not going back into the Middle East to fight a war. They call Israel the little Satan and America the great Satan. They're the firewall between radical Islam and the West. I began writing in the late 80s that the first terrorist attack in America would be New York City and the tallest building. I wrote a book on it 2 years before the attack happened. So if Israel is weakened, radical Islam will strike America. Not once, not twice, but dozens of 911s. They have no idea the hell that will come their way if Israel doesn't take the blow for us, because they consider Israel little America. And so it's in our own self-interest to help the state of Israel. Listen, there are 700,000 Americans living in Israel. That's more than most congressional districts.
Hmm. Yeah, you're right. And the threat of Islam, I mean, we had the two National Guardsmen, one of them fatally murdered in Washington, D.C. You mentioned the Australia terrorist attack, 16 Jews killed. And then there's kind of these one-offs every, it seems like every few weeks, where Jews are targeted, or just Americans are targeted by radical Islam. This is a major problem, and America has imported hundreds of thousands, if not millions, millions over the years, Islamists that don't love America. They hate Israel. And they wish us harm. I mean, I've got clips from Dearborn, Michigan of them talking about establishing the caliphate and how they've got plenty of foot soldiers here in America. This is a major problem. And I just don't think we have any time to be waffling on whether or not we're going to support Israel in the Middle East. I think it's abundantly critical.
And we've got to follow the money. One third of the New York Stock Exchange is owned by the Gulf states. They've got $3.5 trillion into the New York Stock Exchange. Gutter has put $400 billion into American. They started chairs on university campus to poison the young people against Israel. And it worked. It worked. Now they're using AI and social media. My pastors are getting bots. They're not people. They're bots. You think they're people, criticizing them because they're standing up for Israel. And guess what? They're saying the same thing to the pastors. The same comments are being, trying to marginalize them, trying to get them to shut up. So it's an economic war. It's an ideological war. It's a media war. And it's a proxy war. And we better wake up, because they're coming for us.
Mm, absolutely. You know, one of the things that was revealed specifically on the platform X, formerly known as Twitter, they pushed an update back a couple months ago that actually discloses where each user account is set up. And what we realized, and many people knew this before, but what the broad user base realized is that a lot of these so-called images from Gaza of children, you know, in the streets, etc., are actually just what you're saying. They're bot accounts. They're not even from the Gaza region. They're not even from Israel. They're from like Africa and these far, far away lands. These are fake images. This is pure propaganda that is being pushed out on the internet to draw these anti-Jew audiences. And it's not even legitimate. We've got about 1 minute left. Last word, Dr. Evans.
Yeah. The Muslim Brotherhood is behind a lot of this. And they've got huge partners throughout the world. And it's the target is on us. Yeah, we've got to hold these people accountable that are attacking Israel, because they're really attacking America. Listen, Tucker Carlson can fragment the Republican Party, cause the president to lose the midterms. What he's doing is it's pure insanity. I'm the strongest American Trump supporter in the state of Israel. I did all the billboards. I hosted the embassy gala for him. I gave him my Friends of Zion Award in the Oval Office. He's the greatest president in American history for the state of Israel. And we can't allow these people to damage him or damage his country.
Amen. Dr. Evans, thank you. God bless.
God bless you. Bye.
All right. We'll talk to you next time, folks. See you next time.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.